Ba da 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 da. Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. Please, Lucasfilm, again, do not charge me for such usage. I am your head pilot, Brian C. Wood, and with me today is my co-pilot,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. Guess what, movie fans? It's the release week of a brand new Star Wars movie. So we're going to have plenty of Rogue One talk and plenty of trailer talk, because Lord knows there was enough summer blockbuster trailers to go around. And yes, we will also talk about a creepy robot that we didn't get an opportunity to rant on last time. But I want to start off this episode on a somewhat sobering note. Last week marked the end, or the final episode, of the Keeping It Real podcast over at IGN with my good friends Jim Vegeta and Terry Swartz. And I just wanted to take an opportunity in a few moments as we open our podcast this week to inform you of just how important that podcast and the people at IGN were to this podcast being birthed. Speaking as a fan of that, a fan and someone who had picked up that podcast from episode 100, for perspective, the show finished at episode 363. Jeez. So I was with it for quite a little while, and struck up a good friendship with some of the crew members there. But a lot of the format of this show, a lot of the context for how me and Chad interact, a lot of the kind of witty banter that we do, is all kind of modeled after and taken from Keeping It Real. And we here at the Movies on the Brain podcast would like to extend our best wishes to the people over at IGN as they get ready to rebrand and relaunch their show as the IGN Movie Show, which kind of makes sense. I mean, you kind of gotta be easily findable on the interwebs. And as punny as a title can be, it can be hard to find sometimes. So, you know, we thank you guys. Thank y'all for what y'all do for movie nerds and for movie journalism. Thank you for your witty banter and your blue streak and occasionally that one time that inside look at Keeping It Real, where there was some stuff that popped up on your episode where you didn't know that it had popped up until it was too late. Thank you for helping to inspire me and Chad to do this and to get our views on movies out there to the world. And we wish you guys nothing but the best of luck on y'all's new show. So I wanted to go ahead and do that and touch on that because we didn't get a chance to record last weekend after I found out the news. So we wanted to go ahead and do that. Now, Chad, there's a Power Rangers movie coming out.
Yep.
And Rhea Repulsa is in a green dominatrix outfit.
Yep.
And the kids all look like they're in extremist dream of Tony Stark while he was tripping on acid.
Yeah, more or less.
And the movie has the feel of Chronicle.
So far, yes.
From the trailers, from what we've seen. So why is Bill Hader going to play a sexy, creepy robot?
Sexy, creepy?
Sexy, creepy robot.
That is not how I would describe that at all.
That is the way it is being portrayed by the interwebs.
Really? Because when I saw it, it looks like if you made a synthetic robot that's like a model sort of after a potbelly pig with a dish on his head and some headlights to stick out. That's kind of how I would describe it. Because it's different.
The completely black body.
Was it? It's been a week since I looked at it, but yeah, it's...
The head is like 7 times the size of its body.
Yeah. So, out of all of it, the thing that really stands out to me is that these big bulbous eyeballs just stick out the top. As weird as the design is, I'd probably be a lot better with it if the headlights were gone. The headlights are the only thing that bothers me.
You mean his antlers?
I'm just guessing their eyes. I don't know. It's weird as hell. But if you take those away, the head is similar enough to what we know as Alpha 5 from the TV show yes. that I could have lived.
Yes. Okay, so look. Here's going to be my stance on this. Because people who listen to this podcast, and we're, by the way, on episode like 64 now, know that I spent a year of this podcast ranting against Ghostbusters. And not for sexist reasons, as I made perfectly clear many times. I have no problem with this. I have no problem with them making a new Power Rangers movie for a new generation, because I got my Power Rangers movie in 1995. The TV show fed into the movie, and the new version of the TV show came out of the movie. So, you know, the Power Rangers shared universe that I grew up with, I got my movie, I got my Iva News, I got my Rita Repulsa, I got my Green Ranger to White Ranger transformation. I got everything I needed out of a Power Rangers movie in 1995. So I'm good with whatever crazy stuff they want to do. Because if you want to scar these children for life, that's fine. If you want to make them think that Rita Repulsa is somehow a sexy lesbian dominatrix who likes to creepily touch kids' faces as they're sleeping, that's fine. If you don't want to do Goldar, that's fine. If you want to give Alpha 5 headlights, that's fine. If you want to give the Power Rangers power coins that look like little pieces of asteroid instead of actual, you know, coins, that's fine. If you want to set them all in detention instead of at the smoothie center, you know, that's fine too. I don't really care. It's not my movie. It's not for me. Y'all have fun.
So, I don't know what kids they would scar. Because everybody I know that has any interest in this are around a certain age. Between my age, and I'm 35, to about 28-ish. But those people have kids. And I know, the ones that I know, are inclined to bring their kids. And I think their kids will accept whatever this movie is. Their parents, on the other hand, they're borderline like wanting to hate it as it is, but still giving it the benefit of the doubt. So
it's walking a tightrope.
It is, and it has to continue walking a tightrope to be successful. I don't know if it will or won't. I'm open-minded about everything I've seen so far. The bulbous eyes on Alpha do wig me out a little bit, but, you know, okay, whatever. We also got the teaser poster for the Zords, and have you seen it? Did you see it? It doesn't offend me. It's kind of in line with what I thought. So
Zords, it's in line with the redesign that they've been doing yeah. on everything.
So the Zords separately are fine with me. We still don't know if that toy is accurate or not, but we'll see when they all come together.
Look, we are dealing with a movie that is based on a TV show who had to work its endings around pre-conceptualized, pre-done animations from Japan.
Yeah.
So, like, they were so limited in the kinds of stories they could tell. Like, look, I'm not a big fan of the idea of doing John Hughes, you know, teenagers in a detention center. The whole thing does have a real Max Landis Chronicle vibe to it in terms of, you know, the kind of shaky cam footage when they go into the rock or find the rock that turns them into the, and then the flying over canyons and things. It has beats that remind you very much of Chronicle. Now, Chronicle was a very successful movie. Some, like myself, would argue that Trank should have just gone off and made Chronicle 2 right after instead of, you know, destroying his career for, you know, a year and a half with Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between the silly, campy, crazy tone of what was Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in the 90s, like 92, 93 to 95. Yeah. And that fan, crazy, like, director trying to make a name for himself film on YouTube where the Pink Ranger's head starts rolling around. So, like, it seems to me that they were trying to, like, blend the two. And to be honest, I haven't seen a whole lot of the camp. I haven't seen a whole lot of the levity and the fun. And they still haven't told me whether or not the bullies are in there. Because, to me, that's the easiest way to introduce the levity to it.
I mean, yeah, to date, we've only had one trailer. That's one thing of
which actual also interest. Which also kind of... I mean, if we're going to use... Okay, so let's just use Fantastic Four as an example. We got one trailer in January. We didn't get another trailer till June for an August release.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters, we got one trailer in March, another one in April, and we didn't get anything else until one trailer in March, one trailer in May, and then nothing until the movie's release in July.
The marketing on this has been weird because we have that one trailer, but they keep dropping like images.
Right now, to be fair to them, they've gone to cons. Fantastic Four did not go to cons. They bypassed every con. You know.
Yes, right. Because Comic Con was right before.
Right, and not only the Comic Con the year before, they didn't have a presence. Like, and I will never, as long as I live, forget the awkwardness of watching that first trailer drop and then them releasing the video of Trank and Kinberg sitting there analyzing the trailer together.
They did do that. Oh wait, they did go to Comic Con, but I think they just showed like the second trailer, and that was it. They left. They didn't do anything else. I don't think they're avoiding it like Fantastic Four.
I'm interested to see how they handled this, because this to me screams of a January release date, but it's a March release date.
But it originally was a January release date, which I don't know why they moved it.
Because this February and March, people complained about how you had Dawn of Justice, Civil War, and Apocalypse all within 90 days of each other. March. February and March of next year are so, like, you start your summer movie season, Valentine's Day weekend, and you don't stop till after the 4th of July.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, I mean, it's just so much content. And, you know, it is really interesting that unless your name is Star Wars, like, you can't clear the bench. You can't clear the field.
Marvel is getting close to that point, but where they release their
Marvel,
movies...
But even Marvel gets a two-week buffer.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange gets a two-week buffer before Fantastic Beasts. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 gets a two-week buffer before Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell No Tales.
I keep forgetting that's a thing.
Many people are trying to forget that that's a thing. Except Orlando Bloom and Johnny Depp, who are apparently in the movie with Javier Bardem. But, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is only going to have 2 weeks. Homecoming is only going to have 2 weeks to itself before something else comes out that first week of August. So, like, Marvel itself can only get a buffer of 2 weeks. Star Wars? Like, there was Office Christmas Party this week. And that is it in terms of broad, sweeping, nationwide new releases. And this was one of the slowest box office weekends on record.
Yeah.
Because people are staying home and saving their money to go see Star Wars. And movie studios know this, and so they're not putting anything in December. Because they learned their lesson from In the Heart of the Sea last year. And now, Episode 7 had, I think, 7 weeks to run before something big else big. Kung Fu Panda 3, I think, was the thing that broke...
It was, yeah.
That broke Episode 7's reign of terror. Same thing with Rogue One. Rogue One is going to dominate for a 6-7 week period. Star Wars, to my knowledge, is the only brand that can demand that kind of a clear-out. So, if you're going to put this movie in Power Rangers right there in the middle of March, where you got Kong Skull Island, you've got Beauty and the Beast, which I think could potentially be a $1 billion movie.
Yeah.
I know people might... That sounds crazy to some people, but the Ferber for this movie, and the response to all of the trailers and images that have been thrown out there have been overwhelmingly positive.
Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't... Anybody that's, like, confused about why this could be $1 billion, I don't understand you.
Well, I mean, they're looking at the standpoint of it's March, and it's very hard, especially in a crowded March like this is going to be, to pull that off.
Well, we just had one in March. It was Zootopia hit $1 billion. I mean, it took it forever, but it did it. I
thought that was a February release.
Mm-mm, it was March.
First week in March?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think this would be a... Power Rangers would be a safer play in...
In January.
In January.
I mean, I don't remember. I think they're probably the first ones to claim a date in March.
Because that's where Chronicle started. Chronicle was a January release, like the 16th.
Yeah. If I were them, granted, you can't do it now because we're like a month away. But if I were them, in like October, I would say I'm bumping this up to at least before Valentine's Day, so I don't have to deal with
50 Shades Darker.
50 Shades Darker and Lego Batman, and there's one other one that's on that day that I can't remember.
Yes, you talked about this last week, and you still haven't figured out which one it was.
I can't remember what the hell it is. I'm going to look it up now. But I think
Kingsman Golden Circle got moved.
Oh, it did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's going into the summer. That's a whole bunch of stuff. But I would have moved it to January, but I did it months ago. Now they're kind of stuck there. And I don't know how... I mean, even if it's good, just because of what's around it, it's probably going to suffer.
Well, I mean, look at TMNT, right? I mean, it's an August release, which goes up directly against Guardians of the Galaxy. It manages to take the top spot away from Guardians for a week and makes a whole bunch more money than anybody possibly expected because it's an August release. The sequel gets stuck in the middle of June, surrounded by a whole bunch of stuff, gets swallowed up, the box office tanks, and so their franchise is dead.
Yeah, I still haven't seen that movie.
Out of the Shadows is actually like it's a Christmas gift to fans of the 80s cartoon. If you're a fan of the comics or the original movies, for me, it was like, look, man, we couldn't get away with this stuff back in the 90s. Like, we had three movies, we couldn't even touch Brainiac. We couldn't even touch the Technodome. We couldn't do any of that because it was considered too far afield.
Yeah.
And now here we are in 2016, and you're doing it, but it's not picking up. It's not resonating.
Yeah.
Even with your fan base.
Yeah, I looking at the trailers and things, I was like, oh, yeah, people that like the cartoon should like this one. And while the cartoon was my gateway into Turtles, I really gravitate to that first movie more. So all that stuff is fine, and I like Bebop and Rocksteady, but that's kind of like as far as I go. So you say the Technodrome and all that stuff, I'm like,
Well, I mean, you're not a big, like, unbelievable thing. Like, things that are technically not achievable. You know, things that take the realism out of it.
Yeah, I mean,
and the talking brain kind of takes the realism out of it.
A talking brain from another dimension, and all of that stuff is actually in the comics. The original comics, the first run, or I think it's the first book, is pretty much that original movie, except they kill the Shredder, and then after that, it's like brains and Dimension X and all this stuff. I'm like, nope, I'll pass.
I mean, but that was the crazy thing to me, like. We got the Turtles going to Japan and dressing up as samurai. We couldn't get this then.
No, we could.
Like, imagine what we could have done if we could have gotten this in the 90s, man.
Yeah, I do wonder if this one would have came out in the 90s, because that was at the height of the cartoon.
The height of Turtle Mania.
Yeah, I mean, and I think for me, as a person that, as a kid,
Better version of April O'Neil.
That's debatable. Well, yeah, no.
The 90s version of April O'Neil is much better than...
Well, either one.
Megan Fox's.
Yeah, either one of them. I like the second one from Ooze better. But, yeah. Yeah, I think it probably would have turned me around on all this stuff, and I'd like it a lot more, whereas now I don't mind it. I just wouldn't... It wouldn't be the way I would do it.
Well, I mean, like I said, I just think that they're in this weird place where they're trying to mesh two tones together, and I'm not sure it's gonna really work. And I have the same concern with Kong Skull Island. I freaking love that trailer they put out. That second trailer, it was one of my highlights of Comic-Con. The first trailer was. This trailer's just as good. You get some excellent CGI shots of Kong. You get the scale and the scope of how big Kong is. You understand that our theories are probably correct now that John Goodman is an agent of that secret society, and he's going to the island to try and get evidence of the existence of Kong to bring back. But for what Legendary needs them to do, which is move toward Godzilla versus Kong in 2020, they need to make at least what the first Godzilla movie made. And that first Godzilla movie made good money in May. You know, with Days of Future Past and The Amazing Spider-Man and all those other movies right around it. But, you know, it's just going to be a concern for me. Now, the audiences for Beauty and the Beast and Kong Skull Island are not the same audience.
Yeah.
But the audience for Power Rangers and Kong kind of intersect.
Overlap, yeah.
So, I mean, I want Kong Skull Island to succeed at its best, because I think this could be the best, one of the best adaptations of Kong and the Kong mythos ever committed to screen. It would be a shame if that, like, Turtles gets drowned out by other things and doesn't make the money. Also, regarding Kong Skull Island, it was great to hear Gareth come out and say, yeah, they were going to wait for me. They called me up. They said, hey, we can't really wait anymore because we're trying to get this whole thing done by 2020. You know, do you want to, when is the soonest you could turn around and get back with us? And Gareth was like, I think you need to move in another direction. And so it wasn't like, oh, I need a palate cleanser. Oh, I'm tired of big budget movies after doing a Star Wars movie. It was just scheduling. Like they were going to wait, but they didn't have time to wait because they needed to go ahead and make the moves to get Godzilla 2 up and running, because Kong Skull Island's in the can. You got to get Godzilla 2 done, and then
move to Kong versus
Godzilla. Which I believe he would be more than... He said he would be more than happy to come back for another turn in the Godzilla universe, which makes me think he would be willing to come back for Kong versus Godzilla, which with his sense of scope could be an amazing movie.
Yeah, I would agree. And we're done playing peekaboo at this point, so give him... Let him go and take a shot at it.
Oh, they didn't play no peekaboo with Kong.
Oh, no.
They gave it to you straight in the trailer.
Yeah, it's like, no, we're not playing any games. You want to see him? Here he is. Behold how big he is. Alright, so that movie I kept forgetting is John Wick 2.
Which is odd, because the first John Wick was an October release.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
I just remember that...
Like, Equalizer and John Wick came out about the same time.
Okay.
John Wick was in October, Equalizer was in September.
I remember that, yeah. I just remember that I didn't know what John Wick was, and that it was just here.
Well, I mean, it's Keanu reestablishing his dominant, reestablishing himself as an action star.
I'm looking at the list from March.
Read off the list from Valentine's Day weekend on.
Well, let's see. It's not going. It only gives me 1 month at a time. Let's see. Come on, February. We're gonna start in February, Valentine's Day. So it's 50 Shades Darker, John Wick Chapter 2. The Lego Batman movie. That is all on Valentine's Day weekend, the 10th. The next week is a bunch of stuff that nobody's going to care about except for The Great Wall, which we can laugh at. Nothing comes out.
Matt Damon goes to China.
Yeah. Nothing comes out the following week. Now, March. I'll just read all of the bold ones. I don't know what half of these are, but... Before I Fall, Logan, The Shack. That's all 1 week. The next week is Kong Skull Island and The Wall. The following week is Beauty and the Beast, The Velcro Experiment, I can't remember what that is, and Free Fire. The following week, now, I forgot this was a thing, and I don't think this is going to happen, but I'm amused by it. Chips. And if y'all don't know what chips is, just go ahead and Google chips. Make sure everything is capped except for the I and the S. And you should pull up chips just fine.
Estrada.
Yeah. Life, which I don't know what that is either. And Power Rangers. And closing it out is Boss Baby, Ghost in the Shell, and the Zookeeper's Wife.
Not related to We Bought a Zoo.
Yeah. So, there's a bunch of movies coming out, but there's really one big one every week in March.
And how much room does Kong Skull Island have from Beauty and the Beast?
It is the week right before Beauty and the Beast. So,
and then Power Rangers is the week after that.
Yeah. So there's a...
Think about how jam-packed that March is.
So, there's... Okay, so the audience for Logan will probably bleed into the audience for Kong Skull Island. And those two are back-to-back. The audience for Kong is not necessarily going to be the entire audience for Beauty and the Beast. So you get a break for that one.
Counter-programming.
Yeah. But Beauty and the Beast is going to be a monster, and it's probably going to take a couple of weeks. So the week right after Beauty and the Beast is when you get Power Rangers. I don't know if they'll be number one that week. And then after that is...
My bet would be on no. Because my bet would be Power Rangers... I mean, Beauty and the Beast would probably open to somewhere around 90 to 100 million. And would probably need to fall about 40 to 50% the second weekend. Which would lend itself to about a $50, $55 million opening weekend.
I don't think Power Rangers makes 50... Yeah, so as of right now... Power Rangers won't win its weekend. It will be, I think it'll...
Could finish as low as third, because Kong Skull Island could still finish ahead of it.
Yeah. So yeah, I think all of the wide releases that week, their respective weeks, will finish number one, except for Power Rangers. So, I don't know how much money they plan on, we get a sequel point. But usually you have to win the first weekend to even get closer.
Yeah, especially on movies like this where it becomes such a large percentage of your total take is what you make that first weekend. I mean, this is the problem. I mean, this is, like I said, if you're not Star Wars or Marvel, I mean, you don't get any kind of major buffer to make a good bit of money. And the only reason Marvel gets that is because they stake their dates out for...
So far in advance.
Yeah.
And at this point, everybody's like, well, it's just going to be good, so get away from it.
Right. So, Chad, there were a few trailers that dropped this week.
Just a few.
You know, interesting that we're getting our first batch of summer 2017 trailers, and they're all going to be tied in with Rogue One. Let me state, for the record, that I believe Lucasfilm is going to pull off one hell of a surprise... And it is going to have an Episode 8 teaser attached to Rogue One that they're not showing to anybody yet.
That would be quite the surprise.
I think that they want to whip up that fan base into a frenzy. I think that it's something that's going to be really cool to do. And I think it'll give us our title.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to drop a trailer, might as well give us a title. It's a year out.
It's a Star Wars film. And by all of these other trailers that's putting themselves online before the movie comes out, what a nice little surprise to be the last thing before the movie starts. To be, you know, a line from Luke Skywalker and, you know, the title card.
Yeah, because all of these trailers can't possibly be in front of every sitting of Rogue One.
Now, you do get 20 minutes of trailers now, so... Yeah. But even on a premiere screening, so
even with that, we have just the ones that are associated with Disney proper. You have Beauty and the Beast, Spider-Man, Guardians, and the surprise Star Wars trailer. If you want, so with counting yours, there's four. So you probably have another three. And we have...
Logan could attach a trailer, theirs.
What else did we get? There's some other. The god awful one.
Oh, the Age of Extinction.
Yeah.
I was saving that for last. We will cover that last.
Yeah, I realized you didn't say it before, but I know you, so I knew you weren't going to miss the chance to get me to.
No. You didn't miss very many opportunities to bring up Ghostbusters.
Touche. All right. But it seems like there. I think there's like two other ones, but I can't remember what they are. So yeah, that's going to be. I'd like to see them all on the big screen, but somebody's going to get cut, and
I mean, don't you... I just believe that the marketing machine at Disney is too smart to bypass on that opportunity. And you, we remember they had these secret plans a year ago at Thanksgiving to do this secret rollout of the Episode 7 trailer.
That's right.
So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if... I mean, Johnson's film has been in the can for what? They wrapped filming in August?
Yeah, somewhere around
July or August? And I know that there's a whole bunch of special effects shots that have to be completed, but we're talking about a 30-second title card and voiceover.
Yeah, it doesn't take much for that. I mean, if just looking at it from Disney's point of view, you know you get one that's permanently attached. I already said there's three of your movies that you could potentially attach to it.
But there are, all those three are already online and already getting massive amounts of views.
Exactly. So why not throw in this other one, nobody knows it's coming.
It takes up that slot. And you let your general audience who is there know there's another Star Wars movie coming next December.
And that should clear up the confusion about where's Rey. Even though I don't think there's that much confusion anymore.
Alright. So let's start our trailer conversation with Spider-Man Homecoming. Your thoughts, sir, on Michael Keaton as the Birdman. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Vulture. A very, very intimidating and angry, vengeful vulture.
Yeah, he seems like a not a very pleasant man.
Far different interpretation than John Malkovich would have done.
Oh yeah, we didn't get much of him. We only got him saying like one line, but his one line is basically, "Mess with me and I'll kill you and everybody you love," which is typical villain speak, but. I mean, when Michael Keaton wants to be in, like, his deranged, petty, just despicable mode, it comes off kind of scary. And we don't even get to see him say it, we just hear him say it. And we have one quick shot of him without the Vulture costume and, like, two or three shots as Vulture. So I think they're keeping that under wraps, and that's good. Because I trust Michael Keaton, I think he'll do well. And but I want to see it, but why give it to me now when... You just want to tease Spider-Man. So, all in all, I really, really like the trailer.
You like web wings?
So, I like web wings in the fact that I've never thought I'd ever see web wings in a Spider-Man movie. And it looks like they're used more or less practically. And it's something that doesn't appear to stay there permanently while he's wearing the costume. So, I'm all a go for web wings. It's all...
And it's a Stark upgrade.
It is a Stark upgrade, and it's very nostalgic for me. It's the first Spider-Man cartoon I remember, and it's probably the only Spider-Man cartoon where he actually uses the web wings, just like he uses them in this trailer. So it all comes full circle for me. I was not expecting to see as much Tony Stark in the trailer. I knew he was going to be there. As I've said before, I hope he's not in the movie a lot. But it's clear from the trailer that he is a central figure in the movie. That doesn't mean he's going to be in there a lot. It just means that because of him, he's focal to what Peter's going through. And
he has replaced Uncle Ben.
Kind of. More importantly, I like the whole high school thing that they really tried to emphasize in the trailer. And it's the first time Spider-Man has been in high school in those other movies. But this is the first time it actually...
Senior trip to D.C.
Sophomore trip.
Sophomore trip to D.C.
Yeah, but this is the first time they look like actual kids. And that they belong in high school, and we see just how much of a nerd Peter is.
$500 says that Zendaya plays the kind of guffed up nerdy girl who comes out for homecoming dance and... Oh, wait.
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
That's you? I don't know. I've been looking at her when you've been sitting right next to me the whole time. Yeah, that is the safest bet you can make, like, right now.
Better than putting $500 on Stanford to win the national championship.
Way better. Way better. Even better than that in hindsight.
Well, so. They made the stumble. But, I mean, look, I like the awesome shot at the end of Peter trying to hold the boat together. Although that particular set piece is going to remind a lot of people of The Dark Knight. And I think it's also going to remind a lot of people of Spider-Man 1.
Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
So there's that. I like the wit and witticisms of Tony Stark. I like the kind of mentor role that he's taking on, trying to protect the kid as well as kind of guide him. I like Parker's frustration at being babied and his desire to be let out of his temporary hold.
Like every 15-year-old.
Right. I love the introduction to his friend. Like his friend finding out. I thought that was really cool.
When he dropped the Lego Death Star?
Yeah, the Lego Death Star, yeah.
Yeah. They're really working up this whole, hey, we're working with Disney and they have Star Wars and we're going to just jam-pack as much Star Wars stuff as you can in here.
So, I liked all those things. Keaton's Vulture looks really neat. It looks kind of like, because he has that line, what interested me the most about the trailer was that line that Keaton has where he goes, boys, the world is changing, it's time for us to change too. Which would seem to me to indicate that he's gotten his hands on some kind of technology to make the Vulture suit.
Yeah, they,
And we also got a quick glimpse of that other side villain.
The Shocker.
We got a real quick, and I would not be surprised if that the gun that they were using to take the ATM out is related to Chitauri technology.
So, people online are split on who the Shocker is, because we get a shot of, well, it depends on what trailer you watch. There's a shot of Joaquin one of them, and he looks like he's got, like, one of the Shocker gauntlets on his hand. And then there's another shot of the guy, I can't remember his name, but he's standing next to Donald Glover. And he has on what looks like the same kind of Shocker-esque jacket that we saw in the leaked set photos. So people don't know which one of them is actually Shocker or whatnot. I don't know. I don't really care. I can kind of wait for that. But the fact that they show, like, common criminals using this high-tech technology, and they said the Tinkerer is in here, and that the technology may be influenced or from designed from whatever happened, the stuff that happened with the Avengers and the first Avengers.
The Chitauri.
Yeah. It's nice world building, and it's going to give Peter something to do.
Cause nice world building along with fake Avengers.
Yeah, that was, again, we're letting y'all know what this is. Well, this thing says Sony in the door. This is a Marvel production, and we're going to shove as much of this stuff in there as we can. So, a Point Break nod with Avengers cast.
I mean, I like it. I liked everything I saw from it. I like the John Hughes vibe, the Freaks and Geeks vibe to it. I think the humor is going to be really well done. I think the set pieces are going to be really well done. And of course, you close the trailer with that epic shot of Spider-Man and Iron Man swinging into action together.
Yeah, I hope that is the only time we see Spider-Man and Iron Man work together. And I hope it's at the beginning, and then he can go off. And we can see Tony Stark, but not so much Iron Man.
And other Spider-Man related news. Sony made waves. They planted a flag on the calendar for Homecoming 2. Thus giving us our first Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 4 film.
And this works in line, when we talked about it before, that they would want to do these movies quickly. So this is 2 years removed from Homecoming.
4th of July weekend, 2019.
Yeah.
And there's no room for error, though. I mean, Watts has to come back.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
Watts has to come back because you can't go find another director and still hit that date.
Yeah, because you're pretty much going to have to start shooting probably next year? Maybe early 18, but probably next year. But it shows that not only they're confident in Homecoming, Sony and Marvel feel this relationship can continue, and they worked out whatever things that need to be worked out to continue it for however long they want to do it. So that is all encouraging signs, so we don't have to worry about this being a one and potentially done, which is
interesting. Benefit Spider-Man. Well, it'll be interesting to see how they balance his obligations contractually. Six obligations, you would assume that would be 3 MCU movies and 3 standalone movies. Be interesting to see which MCU movies they cross-pollinate him with. Especially if he's still, you're not ready yet.
He's got to,
I mean, if he's still going with you're not ready yet in summer 2017, and Thanos is coming in May of 2018.
Yeah.
I mean,
if he's going to be in Avengers, that you're ready line is going to, it might still continue within Homecoming. I doubt it. I'm going to think part of where we're going with this movie is Peter proving himself as a capable hero, and he can stand on his own, and not just to us, because we already know he's Spider-Man, but to the characters in this world, particularly Iron Man. So if that story idea still was out there, once Thanos shows up and if Spider-Man's in the movie, that kind of always goes out the window.
You know what also will go out the window?
What's that?
Any reference to Pepper Potts and Homecoming.
Yeah, pretty much.
Question time with Mr. Feige. He must answer questions. He must answer questions. Also found it interesting, no official start of production press release announcement for Infinity War, which was supposed to have started filming in November. So.
But did they actually start? I know they're down there already doing pre-production.
They've been in pre-production since July down there. And everybody's schedule is so jam-packed, especially with the way that Marvel's shooting right now, because you've wrapped all 3 of your 2017 movies. You're starting production on Black Panther in January.
Yeah, that is interesting. Maybe they just started and like, we'll drop this. Like, I mean, because there's a whole bunch of stuff around Marvel coming out right now as it is. So maybe they decide to hold it off, wait till the news gets slow right after Christmas, and then hit us with the, here, synopsis, we started shooting, blah, blah, blah.
Here's your cast list.
Yeah.
Which is like 3 pages. So let's move on to the other Marvel property that dropped a trailer, Baby Groot and the Guardians.
Before I give my trailer reaction, the Rogue One premiere was last night, and I saw a picture of Kevin Feige. And in said picture, Kevin Feige is wearing a ball cap with a Baby Groot on it. They're already starting to push for Baby Groot merchandise. I don't even wear hats that often, and I want a hat because it has Baby Groot on it. Because Baby Groot is the goddamn cutest, most adorable thing as it is. And
it almost is enough to make you forgive Vin Diesel for Xander Cage.
No, what it does is Baby Groot is so cute and adorable that it makes me, in my mind, separate the fact that Baby Groot is Vin Diesel. There is no Vin Diesel at that point. It's just Baby Groot. So I don't care what Vin Diesel does, because in this space, he's just Baby Groot. So I can be mad as Vin Diesel. I will never be mad at Baby Groot, because Baby Groot is going to be in my home in many different ways. I saw the trailer, and as soon as they showed his little face, I'm like, I want one. So when I got home, and I showed it to the little girl, and I knew it was coming again, and as soon as I saw his face, as soon as his face came up, just on cue, just awe. And at the same time she's awing, I feel my wallet in the future just draining of money. Because Baby Groot's coming in many different forms into my house. So, if you can't tell, I'm a fan of Baby Groot.
If they, they made BB-8 a thing.
They did. And if they want to put a toy with a BB-8 and a Baby Groot standing on top of BB-8, that's probably their best thing to do. Because everybody's going to buy it. Just go ahead and do that. That's a free one, Marvel. You can give me a little kickback. But go ahead and do that. He was the standout of this trailer, but by no means was he.
I am Groot!
but this, of all the trailers we're going to talk about, this is probably going to be my favorite. Might not necessarily be the best, but it's my favorite because it felt like I was watching a condensed version of the original movie with more interaction between the Guardians. And that's what made the first movie so... Everything that made the first movie so great is in this trailer. And they pull it all off in 2 minutes. And it makes me just want to, like... It makes me wish May was here right now. Because I know I'm going to have fun with this movie.
So you're not,
have fun with this trailer.
So you're not at all concerned about the idea that they might have just given us the information that the whole third act of the movie is the Guardians trying to blow up Ego, the living planet, from the inside.
No. Are you talking about the Drax stuff?
No, I'm talking about Baby Groot.
Oh.
Running with a nuclear bomb into what looks like a hollowed out area, which, with spaceships flying all above, and a starfighter in a spaceship fight going on, and Star-Lord and Rocket arguing over tape, and Baby Groot running off with a nuclear weapon with the death button into the heart of Ego, the living planet.
See, the way I read that scene, just, and this has a lot to do with how the trailer's cut, and maybe it's, I mean, it could be placed anywhere in the movie, but it seems like in the trailer that shot of Baby Groot was, in my mind, it's like, it's the first shot we see of Baby Groot. So, like, to me, this whole thing takes place at the very beginning. They've done something stupid. They're in the middle of something stupid.
No, see, I think the shots that we got in the teaser trailer and the shots we got in this trailer of them fighting the octopus looking character, that's the cold open.
Yeah.
And that's where Drax is jumping into his mouth, going down into inside of him, and then just starting to wail on him with the knives from the inside. I think that's an opening set piece, a cold open. I think all the stuff with the spaceships and Star-Lord standing there and the spaceships, little round spaceships coming up to look at him, those are the spaceships that are fighting with Nova Corps in the background as Rocket and Groot are talking. Rocket and Star-Lord are talking and Groot's walking that way. I think that's on top of Ego the Living Planet. I think they're inside of Ego the Living Planet and they're trying to blow him up from the inside.
So I can see that being the end just as well.
Although we personally in this podcast don't endorse that because we want Galactus to be the downfall of Ego the Living Planet.
Ego can't be blown up because Galactus has to eat him at the end of Infinity War Part 2 or whatever they're going to call it. I very well see, just like you're saying, the only thing that makes me stop and maybe hope that it's not is that we all know. Well, they kind of said, and we all assume, particularly since they showed us Mantis in this trailer, that Baby Groot is going to become Big Groot sometime in this movie. Because of how people feel about Baby Groot, I would imagine it would be somewhere in the third act. So I guess it could still happen there. But the fact that we just have little Baby
Groot. Or the radiation from the bomb
makes him
grow.
Grootier and he's big. I never thought of them blowing up Ego because it just... Blowing up Ego never crossed my mind because Galactus has to eat him. It's like, it's on the table for you.
Fox is still not committed to a Fantastic Four 2, although Kimber keeps walking around talking about it.
I think the ice between Marvel and Fox is slowly breaking. Not to the point that they'll ever do anything together with X-Men, but to the point that Fox might finally be like, fine. We're not giving you Fantastic Four back, but you can make money from Fantastic Four for us, and we'll do that. They might be finally getting to that point. or Marvel might be seeing.
Especially if we get the first billion-dollar Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, but I think we'll have to know before then. The only other way I see a deal happen is if Marvel just like, all of these X-Men merchandising rights that you never had rights, that you never had anything for, and we've basically been hemorrhaging you on toys because you can't make anything because we won't let you. Here, give us Fantastic Four. You see these Spider-Man toys? Dollar signs. This is yours. Take it. Give us Fantastic Four. So it's one of those two things. I think one of those two things will happen. It's just a matter of when we find out.
So, I mean, any other thoughts on the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer? I mean, Drax seems to be on his top of his game.
Yeah. If you would have told me that I would think Dave Bautista is anywhere near a successful actor, not like that he made it past Hulk Hogan level and Suburban Commando and stuff, and is actually like in a big block summer blockbuster, and he's not just a dumb dude that beats people up like Triple H was in Blade 3, like that he was actually like, if not my favorite, my second favorite thing in the trailer.
And remember, there were those times when Paul Levesque was campaigning to be Thor.
Yeah, and I'm glad those things never happened. When Batista was announced as Drax, I'm like, okay, he's the third guy behind two people that are actors. He's going to get to be the muscle to beat people up. And he was funny. He's way funnier in this trailer for 2 seconds than he is in that whole first movie. And I liked him in the first movie. I've seen that trailer, I can't tell you how many times. And every time, I'm on the verge of tears the minute he starts laughing at Star-Lord. It's goddamn hilarious. And I never thought I'd say that about Dave Bautista. And bravo, sir. Bravo, James Gunn, because you know what to do to get this dude to look like he does. All of this trailer is just so much fun. I'm going to watch it when I go home now.
So let's move on to Dawn of the War for the Planet of the Apes. Your thoughts on Caesar's wintry ride to the various battles.
So this one was a surprise, because...
Makes sense. I mean, it's a July movie.
When it dropped, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not...
They showed parts of this footage at New York Comic Con. October.
See, I didn't know that. If I'd known that, maybe I wouldn't have been as surprised. But I was literally just sitting at my desk, and then, poop, there's the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I'm like, oh, okay. But I had to hold off on watching it. So I finally got to see it, and I knew that we were going to get an ape versus human war. But I never knew how much I needed to see an ape versus human war until I saw this trailer. And I'm excited for it now. I was going to see it. I like the first two, but I'm really excited for it now to see, I guess.
The discussion that we've had before is how they end this.
Yeah, and you would think this is the end of Caesar's chapter in this. And it has to lead us to the actual planet of the
Which we know in the beginning of this, of the first movie, Heston lost contact.
Yeah, so the astronaut is out there. So now it's about how does the world change between him leaving and now. We're going to finally get to the point where...
As Woody Harrelson says, if we lose, this is our last chance. If we lose, this will truly become a planet for the apes.
Yeah. And there's not much of Woody Harrelson in this. But he fits that kind of...
Brando-ish, Full Metal Jacket, Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, like he's...
Especially with the face paint and all that.
So this trailer has the task of... I mean, we've seen the other movies, but at the end of the day, this trailer has the task of getting us as humans to feel and root for the apes to end humanity. And they gave us Woody Harrelson as our representation of humanity, and... Well, I completely understand everything he's doing. I still want him to lose. So the trailer's good in that way, that it can still give me a person that I can relate to, or why they want to do the things they're doing, but still want them to lose, even though if this was real, it would mean that I'm losing.
Well, my thing about it is I know where this is going, yeah. right? Because I know that eventually this is going to become the Planet of the Apes that Charlton Heston lands on and thinks that he's on a distant planet somewhere only to figure out that, hey, there's the Statue of Liberty and those damn dirty apes have, you know, taken over the whole world. The Apes trilogy, I feel, is going to be overlooked and overshadowed for how great it truly is. These are powerful films. This is a rebooted franchise that works, and in some cases works on levels that the original didn't even work. These are functioning as social commentaries on war, on peace, on our relationships with each other, coexistence. I love the line in the trailer that Caesar has about, I did not want war. You know, Koba is the one who wanted war. You know, Gary Oldman's character from the original, from the second movie, wanted war. I did not want war. Koba is the one who took the actions that led the humans to call out for help. And that is where we are now. And we are many years into, a couple of years at least, into the war between apes and humans. And both sides are taking massive casualties. I'm really interested to see Caesar go on this journey, especially kind of finding that that little girl and how that little girl may help open up his heart to remembering the humanity that is within him that he may have lost over the course of a long war with a lot of sacrifice, especially personal sacrifice. I'm just really interested. The scenery looks beautiful. Reeves does a tremendous job. Again, it looks like I could not be more excited and more interested for what we are going
to
get.
Yeah. To think, with this franchise, it's like I never knew anybody clamored for more Planet of the Apes movies.
Hey, they got really weird and trippy toward the end there. So, I mean,
like I've seen the original. I haven't seen any of the other ones following the original. And I've never saw the Marky Mark one.
Well, and no one... That's the thing. If you're Fox, this is your hope for Fantastic Four. Tim Burton screwed this franchise up in Apes really, really badly.
Like, it was dead.
Tainted it to the point where it was almost toxic. And it took 13 years, but we eventually got to a place where you could reboot it with a good filmmaker and good screenwriters and telling good stories, understanding, having a deep fundamental understanding of what the original was and what made it so resonant and so successful. And they were able to relaunch it. And so there's always going to be that hope that, hey, look, yes, we screwed it up 3 times now. And yes, it's almost completely toxic. But maybe in 2018 or 2019 or 2020, we could bring it back with a director who understands the material, a writer who's not Kinberg, who understands the material.
Please, God, no.
And we can rebrand this. But that's what they did with Planet of the Apes. It was, no one was clamoring for it. My generation... You know, Planet of the Apes was not something that got replayed on television, on dinner and movie a whole lot. We weren't as familiar with it. What we knew as Planet of the Apes was Burton's movie, which was just god-awful. And so it was just kind of a periphery thing. And then Caesar happens.
And that's a good thing it did. It's a really, really good
film. The best prequel series ever.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I can't think of any besides Star Wars, well, and The Hobbit. And it's better than those two.
On many, many levels.
Yeah.
So, Chad, Michael Bay is still making movies. And he would like to inform you that his movie, Transformers The Last Night, is coming next summer to a theater near you. Would you like to give your response to the footage that was screened in the Transformers The Last Night trailer?
So if this was like a video show, I can just put up my hand and a finger and everybody will know exactly what I think of this movie and about this trailer. Like every time we talk about this, I just start rubbing my head.
Okay, so, well, let's start with the end of Age of Extinction.
So, oh, yeah, Optimus leaves.
So Optimus gets his sword and he heads out to find trace down a signal.
And
yeah. So apparently now he just shuts himself down and just floated in space for
two years. I think what happens is, from what I understand, he actually reaches Cybertron, finds out that it's dead, and then finds out what he needs to bring it back. And apparently, surprise, surprise, it's on Earth. I don't know what that is, but
it's Galar.
Yeah, if I had to guess, just considering there's knights in this trailer
and Nazis
for a Transformers movie, that the artifact that he needs is indeed Excalibur, which was given to people on Earth years ago. So Optimus has to go back to find it. But what I think is going to be funny is that the same damn sword he left off with is indeed Excalibur, which will make this whole movie stupid and pointless because he would have already been to Cybertron with Excalibur. But I'm going off on another tangent of anger and not the current course we're on.
Explain something to me. Why is he trying to murder Bumblebee? Are you going to try and make Optimus Prime the villain of your movie?
So, I'm going to guess. There's a part in this trailer where there's this big planet-sized thing that's moving, I guess, towards Earth.
I haven't stopped to actually look frame by frame at this trailer.
Oh, I will never look frame by frame. This is all I got from one viewing. Because as soon as I saw that thing, I'm like, well, we knew it had to happen eventually. So I think that planet will end up turning out to be Unicron. If you don't know who Unicron is, go back to the good Transformers movie, the cartoon from the 80s. And in that movie, in which Optimus bravely sacrifices his life to try to kill Megatron, there is a planet-sized Transformer called Unicron, who is quite like Galactus in that he is a devourer of worlds. And I think that is what that planet thing is in this trailer. And I think it finds Optimus floating in the ether and is like, oh, you, I can use you. And he sends him to Earth for whatever other reason. And he is his
herald.
You're
not giving me a story that makes any kind of coherent sense.
This story has Transformers, Nazis, and the Knights of the Round Table. None of those three things belong.
And Marky Mark.
None of those three things belong. Of course this is not going to make any sense. Because Michael Bay is Transformers.
So explain to me how we get from Marky Mark and a little girl who lost her family in the Battle of Chicago. Which Battle of Chicago, I don't know, because there were multiples. In a timeline in which it seems like there's a post-apocalyptic world going on, and like people are being hunted by the governments. How do we get from that to Nazis to King Arthur?
I don't know. I know Marky Mark's on the run. I don't understand why. This trailer doesn't tell me why. Nor do I care.
How are there many Dinobots?
Again, how have there been new Transformers every movie? When after the first one, they explicitly say, this is it. This is all they got. There were five of them and a whole bunch of Decepticons. And we killed a few of them in the first movie. And every movie we come back, there's like 20 more Autobots. But you said there were only five. I don't know. Again, I don't know. I don't know.
Who did he make this movie for, Chad?
Himself. It's not even for the paycheck at this point. It's just, this is what I want to do with Transformers. I want to do this, and I want
to
do this.
But he listened to the story group, Chad.
No, that story group was on a track. And then Michael Bay heard, ooh, so y'all aren't giving up on Transformers? Let me come back. Oh, you guys over there, hey, cut them their check. Thanks for your work. All right, so this is what I want to do. This is what I got.
I got King Arthur, I got Knights, and I got Nazis. I got Churchill.
No, I'm glad you said that name, because that's my biggest thing from this trailer. I really and truly think just from the glimpse we had of Anthony Hopkins, I really and truly think he's going to be Winston Churchill. The fact that he's, if he is Winston Churchill, and we've heard him in this trailer, he specifically says Optimus Prime. Optimus Prime wasn't around when Churchill was around. That means, on top of every other stupid thing in this movie, there's freaking time travel. And you know what? That all fits, because this is a hodgepodge of stupidity. And just throw it all up there. So we're going to get Anthony Hopkins to play what in any other movie would probably be a very great role for him as Winston Churchill in a Transformers movie in present day. That is as stupid as it sounds.
It's not coherent at all.
No, not at all.
They hired 15 people to sit in a room and come up with stories.
And they told them all to take a hike.
And there's still a Bumblebee spinoff movie coming.
Not if Optimus cuts his head off, which at this point is what I hope for.
And, you know, Marky Mark trying to save the day.
Marky Mark saves his little daughter.
Who's also on the run and in hiding.
Yeah. So dumb. It's also stupid.
At no point did Steven Spielberg and Harrison Ford tie George Lucas to a chair and say, George, we are not leaving this room until you give us a better story for an Indiana Jones 5 than Indiana Jones versus the Interdimensional Beings. And so we got Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
Has no one considered tying Michael Bay to a chair and just handing him a script and saying, you will follow the script or we will not let you out of this chair?
But here's the thing. George Lucas, like, he came up with Indiana Jones. It's like his thing. Michael Bay didn't come up with Transformers. Fire him. Just don't give him the job. That's as simple as it is. You do that, you don't have all this mess.
You think that they would ever hire another director? That Bordellani or whatever his name is,
if this one
would be willing to move off.
If this one crashes and burns like it looks like it has. Because unlike the other ones, they were all god-awful movies. But at least people were like, ooh, the trailer got me excited. This one, people were like, what is this?
I heard complaints because the trailer was too slow at the beginning and didn't show enough action.
Well, they're not wrong, but have you seen a Michael Bay Transformers movie? There's lots of action. It's spaced out between the 3 hours it takes to get through this stupid movie. Good God. Yeah, the last one was, what, 2.5 hours? You know this one is pushing 3, right? And if it's pushing 3, then there's going to be some time jumping stupidity going on that doesn't need to happen.
So Chad, we're getting Michael Bay doing a movie in which there are Nazis, there's Churchill, there's Nazis, there's King Arthur, there's Guinevere, there's the Knights of the Round Table, there's Marky Mark, there's Stanley Tucci, but there's no Shia LaBeouf and no Megan Fox.
Yeah.
And none of Shiloh's parents.
Nope. Why not? Would you want to come back for this?
I don't know. I think he's completely lost his mind. So I think he would be willing to do it for a paycheck.
Well, I don't know. Shiloh has said some not so kind of things about those kind of movies.
He said not so kind of things about Steven Spielberg too.
Well, that's just,
which probably is not the best career
move. No, that's just dumb. You know who he is? He put his name on his franchise and it got made. He didn't do anything else. Really?
He fired Megan Fox.
Steven's fired Megan Fox? Okay. Still ain't worth him having a name on it, but okay.
So, I think that we're just in for another action-adventure mess.
Not even action-adventure, just garbage.
That the Chinese love. Blowing up things is an international language, Dad.
Fine.
So, Chad, there was a movie that had its premiere over the weekend, and the weekend before that, screened some footage for some people. It is a Star Wars movie called Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
your thoughts, sir, on the reactions that we are getting. The overwhelmingly positive reactions that we are getting for Rogue One.
To understand my reactions, I think you have to first understand that, you know, within the last year, we've heard all kind of horror stories about the production.
Not Fantastic Four level horror stories, but like redoing three-fourths of the movie.
Yeah, and like Gareth had, whatever Gareth had done wasn't working, and they had to scrap three-fourths of the movie.
Lucasfilm got scared because he made a war movie in the Star Wars universe, and they weren't sure that they could sell toys off of that, so they went in and they reworked it with Terry Gilroy and...
Yeah, and so I was very intrigued to see what the reviews were, and we don't get proper reviews until Tuesday the 13th. But right after the premiere, people were allowed to like tweet out their thoughts. And everyone that I follow and looked out unanimously were like glowing about the movie as much as they could.
Mad Max Fury Road level.
Like, yeah, that's a good example, a good comparison. The thing I saw the most was awesome, wow, and great. These are most of the people I follow that saw it were critics, and they normally say how they feel about movies, and I might not necessarily agree with them, but you know, it gives you a feel of what it is.
Most of what I've read is, yeah, you get your war movie.
Which, after all the stuff went down, I was like, were we really going to get that? It didn't seem like we were. It seemed like they were going to doll it up some kind of way. But that is encouraging on a bunch of different levels. Just for this movie, it's something different that's good. That Star Wars is not like a saga story. So it pretty much assures that the Star Wars universe is only going to get bigger from here.
And there's word out there now that Vader is truly horrifying in this movie.
Thank God. I hadn't seen that yet. And that's what I want. If I got nothing else out of this movie, I wanted the legend, the aura of what Darth Vader was before the prequels to come back. Because before the prequels, what you always heard about Darth Vader.
AFI's list of the top 100 villains in film history. Vader's number 3.
Yeah, and it's, we saw what he did in the original set of movies, and then you know the backstory you always heard was, you know, he killed all the Jedi, and murdered was more or less the word they used. So, and they built the Jedi to be the Knights of the Order and the pretty much the toughest to go around, and he killed them all. So this is a bad dude, and then the prequels come along and it's like, that's not what he is.
Whiny little brat who kills children. And Sam people.
Yeah. And they started in the Rebels cartoon, Vader has shown up, and in the constraints they have with the cartoon, he is more fearsome there than he was in the prequels. So given that this was a war movie, and we see how he is at the beginning of Star Wars and like choking people out just for like pissing him off, I wanted to see Vader unhinged, and that bodes well for this whole movie.
Especially for James Earl Jones' logical last time playing Vader.
Probably, yeah. Now, they probably can stick him in Rebels here and there, but on screen, this is probably it. Yeah.
So, I mean, where does this place your expectations? I mean, I'm already seeing people putting Rogue One as their second favorite Star Wars movie behind Empire. I mean, that's pretty high praise.
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't really know what my expectations were beforehand. I expected it to be good, and it can't be worse than Revenge of the Sith. Revenge of the Sith is like the best of the prequels for me, and if you're not worse than that, then you're okay. So I think that's what my expectations were, just to be good. Now I'm kind of expecting great now.
I mean, I was expecting a movie that was going to make $130 to $150 million opening weekend, and I'm now anticipating a movie that's going to make $150 to $180. I'm excited. I'm going to get my war movie from Gareth Edwards, which is really encouraging. I'm going to get a hard PG-13 movie in the Star Wars universe.
and not that it's going to have to deal with this, but for Gareth Edwards, that's going to be, it's reassuring for him, because we got movies that we know coming from him, and the way this everything was sounding before, it didn't look too...
It was looking like Josh Trank territory. Yeah. Like, you're going to have to go away for a little while before you can come back.
Yeah.
But with this, I don't know, man. Like, for as brilliant as the people in the story group at Lucasfilm are, how they could have let their narrative get so far out of whack last summer, back in the summer, to not get control of that and not correct the stories as they were coming out at the time. I mean, this never happens with Marvel, right? Marvel never goes back for reshoots on all of their movies. They never have to answer for it. This one, for some reason, started a panic. Lucasfilm never got out there and got ahead of the story and changed the narrative. Until 2 weekends ago, when they showed the 30 minutes of footage. And then the narrative started to turn around. And then on the junket, you get Felicity Jones saying, yeah, the reshoots, we did reshoots, but they're routine and didn't really add anything to or take anything from the movie. And you get Gareth saying, I had complete control over everything creatively. You know, this is my movie. And he's not like David airing it, where he's like secretly feeding stuff to the Hollywood Reporter about, hey, this was what my experience really was like, but on the press tour, I kind of have to like take bullets. All this,
yeah. That to me, it just seems like this was Lucasfilm's first foray into a Star Wars movie that wasn't a saga film, and they corrected the course with Episode 7, but this is something completely different, and it's a war movie. You're making a war movie set in Star Wars. They don't know how people are going to receive it. So,
and it's not like they test screen their movies for people.
Yeah,
they do friends and family screenings to kind of help them, but they're not going to do a traditional in an auditorium regular people test screening.
So they're flying blind. They have completely no idea what to expect, and you're giving the audience this kind of turn in what a Star Wars movie is. So I think they were just scared, and they just started saying stuff, and because they didn't know what to expect. With this movie being as successful as I think it will be, and the reception is going to get, I don't think we'll ever have that come out of the Star Wars camp again, because now you've done it. You've done a non-saga movie that's something different, and people responded to it. Now you can go balls to the wall and do whatever you want and not have to worry about that.
Here's my interesting question. Out of all the material that's come out from all the Entertainment Weekly pieces they've done, when I knew that when Lucas sold Lucasfilm, he gave them spec scripts or outlines for 7, 8, and 9 that they promptly threw away. I didn't know he also gave them a list of ideas for spinoff films. Now, of course, they said Rogue One and Han Solo were not on that list. But he said that Kathleen Kennedy said they have his list and they are working with his list in the story group. What other spinoff movies did George want to do? And if George wanted to do spinoff movies in the Star Wars universe, why didn't he freaking go do it after the prequels?
Oh, because he was heartbroken after the prequels, because people
didn't like his vision.
Yeah. So that,
the creation had turned on the creator.
Yeah. And that's why he didn't do those. But I don't know what other ideas he has. I mean, I would think that the Boba Fett movie is still very
much got down the line far enough to have footage ready for that celebration.
Yeah, that was surprising to hear that they actually had like a, I don't know if I say a trailer, but maybe a sizzle reel or something.
An announcement tease.
Yeah, and if they got that far along the line with that, you'd have to think that that they're not completely done with the Boba Fett idea. So that's probably on the table. Was that something that George pitched or something else again on his list? Who knows? I would like to know what George pitched just to see. Because I think George comes up with good stories. I don't think he can direct those stories. And sometimes he needs to work with like dialogue and scripting issues. But coming up with the concepts and the stories, I think George can do that pretty well.
I mean, it's just going to be interesting to me to see. I mean, again, if this works, your next solo film is like the biggest gamble of all time. A backstory solo movie for a character who no one asked for a backstory or a solo movie for.
Yeah. But
directed by the guys who made Legos a thing.
Yeah. Because of this movie and because of the Lord Miller's success with everything else, I don't think they'll see it as a gamble.
Those dudes like a challenge, and this is a challenge.
This is a challenge, and they've knocked all the rest of their challenges out of the park. A Lego movie, again, when I heard it, I'm like, this is stupid.
Now we're going to get a Lego Batman movie.
We're getting a Lego Batman movie, we're getting a Lego sequel.
And a Ninjago movie.
And so, like, the minute I saw the Lego movie, I'm like, the minute I saw the first trailer, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm in. I never thought I'd say those words. So they did that. They've done 21 Jump Street. Not only did they do 21 Jump Street, they went back and made a sequel. And normally for those kind of comedy movies, it's hard to make a sequel and have it stand up. And I'd argue 22 is better than 21. Particularly the gun scene with Ice Cube and stuff. I love that. I still laugh at it so much. But these guys, they go out on a limb and they succeed. So with that track record and what this movie's going to do, I think Lucasfilm is going to feel like Han Solo is in good hands.
Indeed. So that'll about do it for this week's podcast. We will be doing a post Rogue One spoiler cast this week. So there will be no regular episode. It'll just be a straight Rogue One spoiler cast for our next episode. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow me on Twitter at BCWTigerFan.
And at The Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and may the Force be with you.